Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I'm going to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. It is good to be back. I spent the last 4 weeks conducting two 10-day series in both Paradise, California, and Raymond, Wisconsin, which is a little north of Chicago, and I only had one day at home in between both. But last week, I was catching up on my much-missed family, so we didn't send out an e-site there. But this week, I'd like to continue where we left off with our third and final pass at Jesus' words that we were looking at previously in Luke chapter 6. This is Luke 6, 27 through 36, where Jesus said, "But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn the other also. If someone takes your coat, don't withhold your shirt. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." Again, so much could be said about Jesus' teachings on active nonviolence or nonviolent non-cooperation. I want to encourage each of you, if you've not had the chance, to go back and at a bare minimum, just check out part 3 of the e-site series we wrote last year on nonviolence. You can find that on the e-sites page. It's dated of 6/12/2012, last year. In part 3, I share the cultural context of what it means to turn the other cheek or giving away your tunic or going the second mile in Matthew 5, which is same reference here in Luke 6, and just a little different. Most of the world's great leaders throughout history, or ruling societies, or dominant cultures, they successfully united around a rallying point of having a common enemy. It's effective and it's easy. It's actually the easiest way known to us to produce unity among people. You produce a common enemy, and people who could even have once been enemies themselves with each other, they'll unite and join together against their now common enemy. An example of this is found within Shakespeare's play, where he has Henry IV giving similar advice to his son, who will become Henry V after him. This is from Henry IV, Part 2, Act 4, Scene 5. "Be it thy course to busy giddy minds, with foreign quarrels that action, hence borne out, may waste the memory of the former days." Another ironic example of this principle, if we're looking at it this week, is found in the very story of the betrayal and murder of Jesus himself. A friendship was struck between Herod and Pilate, who, until Jesus appeared on the scene, were actually enemies. In Luke 23:12, it says that that day Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they had been enemies. And what I find breathtakingly amazing is that, contrary to all of this, Jesus in Luke 6 is announcing a new kind of society, a new way of living life together, a kingdom so much, not centered around a common enemy. Jesus is trying to center, though, a group of people around actually loving your enemies, whoever they may be. Enemy love, when one carefully combs through the teachings of Jesus, enemy love is found to be at the very core of everything Jesus was about, as well as to be at the core of the kingdom that he came to establish and he's calling us to enlarge. And this was a new commandment for sure. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus shares how enemy love goes above and beyond the commands that the Jews were used to, which they had received through Moses. In Matthew 5:20, Jesus says, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, what kind of righteousness was Jesus teaching that surpassed even what was found in the law or in those commandments? Remember, Jesus is talking here not about going to heaven, but about being a part of a kingdom which is from heaven, which is also a kingdom that is both here and now. The kingdom of heaven, which Jesus is referring to, remember, it's not a kingdom in heaven. It's a kingdom which is of or from heaven to earth through Jesus. To be part of Jesus' new kingdom here and now that he was establishing, you were going to have to embrace a morality that went far beyond that which was found in the old laws. In the old laws, we do find a positive moral and ethical progression, starting with where the Hebrew culture was at when those laws were given. And the law takes them and moves them a little further down the trajectory, along a trajectory. At that point, they needed laws that limited their thirst for retributive vengeance, as we're about to look at in a moment. But they also needed laws that told them not to sleep with their mothers, their sisters, or their livestock. You can find this in Deuteronomy 27, 20 through 23. So when the law meets the original Hebrew audience there in Sinai, they're a train wreck of a people, and God is moving them. If you think of it of a trajectory from 1 to 10, it's as if God is moving them from maybe 1 to 3. And by the time we get to Jesus, we see what number 10 looks like. But Moses was, once again, the starting point. The end point to which the Mosaic trajectory was pointing was Jesus and his teachings. And you can see the trajectory in these two passages. Deuteronomy 19:21, Moses commanded, "Show no pity, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot." Now, a retributive system that expresses and illustrates equality between the offense and the punishment was an improvement, but it's not what God ultimately wants either. It was moving toward what God ultimately wants, but it wasn't there yet. We find the ideal in Matthew 5:38 through 44, where Jesus says, "You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to anyone who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. For you have heard that it was said, 'Love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies." Paul also understood this when he wrote that Christ is the culmination or the ultimate destination of the law in Romans 10, verse 4. And I want to be clear here, this is not in the slightest way saying that the law was something bad, nor are we nullifying or invalidating the law by moving from it to follow the higher, more complete ethical teachings of Jesus. It's actually in perfect harmony with the original intention of the law. Now that Jesus has arrived, you are genuinely following the original intention of the law fully, if and only if you now move away from that level of morality found in the law that the law commanded to the higher moral calling or morality found in the teachings of Jesus and his ethic of enemy love. This is what Paul says in Romans 3:31. "Do we then nullify the law by this faith? Not at all. Rather, we uphold the law." In Galatians 3, he says, "So the law was put in charge of us until Christ came." Let me illustrate what I think these verses are saying to us. A few years ago, I placed my 16-year-old daughter, she was much younger then, but my 16-year-old daughter on an airplane, and she flew from West Virginia to Colorado all by herself to visit her grandmother. Now, the way flights worked back then, especially with her being underage, is she was assigned a flight attendant to watch over her. Now, the intention of the attendant was to get her safely to her grandmother's care. Once my daughter was in the company of her grandmother, it would have been foolish for her to cling to that flight attendant and not go with her grandmother. Now, before she reached her grandmother, it was imperative, before she's handed off, it was imperative that she comply with everything the flight attendant asked her to do. But once she reached her grandmother, it would be in perfect harmony with the desires of the flight attendant For my daughter to now go with the grandmother and now listen to her grandmother instead of her. What if over the course of the flight, try to imagine it this way. If over the course of the flight, my daughter had become so fondly attached to this flight attendant that when she arrived in Colorado, let's imagine she refused to go with her grandmother, desiring to stay with the flight attendant, under the authority of the flight attendant. In one sense, she'd be desiring to simply stay submitted to the flight attendant. But in all actuality, she would have been an utter violation of the original intention of the flight attendant all along. And you see, by staying under the law, we are refusing to go and now live under the new law of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 9:19-21, you find this contrast between the law of Moses and the law of Christ. We're actually violating the original intention of the old law if we don't move into the higher ethic of the teachings of Jesus. The opposite is also true. And now following Jesus over and above the old law, we're not insulting, we're not negating, we're not nullifying that old law. Actually, now that Jesus has come, when we choose to follow Jesus now as our new moral ethic, we're following the original tension, that was always present, the intended purpose that the law always had. Look at it this way. This is one of Paul's statements that I consider to be traditionally a misunderstood passage by him. It's the famous statement he makes in Romans 6:14, "You are not under the law, but under grace." Now, in the past, and I'm very thankful that things are beginning to change today, but most in the past have seen this verse as simply saying, we're no longer under the demanding, oppressive rules. Now we're under God's permissive grace and His forgiveness for our continual shortcomings. And I don't think this is at all what the context of Paul's statement implies. What Paul is contrasting are two moral ethics, two ethical standards that we can choose to allow to govern how we live: the law, which is eye for eye, tooth for a tooth, or grace, which is to be kind to the unthankful and the wicked, to bless those that curse us, to love our enemies. Grace is the enemy love ethic, the mercy. I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. The law is the eye for eye, tooth for tooth ethic. Well, follow closely. What Paul is contrasting, once again, are these two moral ethics of being under law or under grace. Now that Jesus has come, we have two moral standards to choose from. The old laws that are delivered by Moses, again, the eye for eye, tooth for tooth, retributive justice of the law, or the new higher standard of morality, the more difficult, actually, standard of morality found in the teachings of Jesus, which concern grace toward our enemies, love toward our enemies, or a restorative justice of grace, to have mercy, restorative justice rather than vengeance of retributive justice. And these are our options in deciding how to live today. We can either follow the law of Moses, which honestly, again, was a positive. It was an improvement. The Hebrews considered the giving of the law as an act of God's grace and His mercy on them. It was a good thing. It was an improvement from the ways in which God's people had lived previously. We can choose to do that, or we can choose the grace ethic, the grace teachings of Jesus, which are an improvement, a higher demanding level of ethics than was even delivered in the law by Moses. Let me use this example too. When I'm wronged by someone, if this is true, if what we're saying works out, then I have two options at my disposal, and both are technically biblical. I can choose an eye for an eye, which is the law ethic of Moses, or I can choose to respond by praying for, loving, blessing, and giving to those who have wronged me some grace, the grace ethic of Jesus. And now that Jesus has come, if I'm going to call myself a follower of Jesus, I'm under the ethical requirements of the grace of Jesus in the same way that I would have been under the ethical requirements of the law of Moses before Jesus. It's the new covenant. There's a new moral ethic. Part of being a part of Israel was contingent upon me living in harmony with the commandments of Moses. Being a part of Christ's kingdom is indicated or contingent upon me following the commandments now of Jesus, of Christ. it's, again, it's not lawlessness. I don't want that to be what some people hear either. What we're simply saying is that the way of grace is now the new moral standard by which we choose to live as Jesus followers. It's simply Jesus' enemy love example that has become my law, my ethic, my standard by which I now choose to live. And this is the whole point of James's letter, in which he mentions both Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac and Rahab's lie. These were both acts that by the Jews considered these to be morally upright acts, even though they violated the old law of Moses ethics of not killing and not bearing false witness. Now, James was showing that following Jesus, the reason he brings up these two examples is he shows, listen, this doesn't mean lawlessness. It doesn't mean go out and do whatever you want. But it means following a moral ethic that's even higher and more imperative than the ethics found in Moses. When Jesus himself said, "Do not think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to complete them." The Greek pleru is to take something that's incomplete or deficient or that has gaps in it, holes in it, and to fill it out, to make it complete, to make it more whole. This is from Matthew 5:17. This is why John wrote in John 1:17 and 18, he said that the law came through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father has made him known. And what was at the core again of these new ethical teachings that Jesus gave us? Again, remember, at the core is enemy love. You won't find enemy love in the law of Moses. You'll find loving your neighbor, which was the fellow Israelites, and you'll find loving God. But you don't find enemy love until much later. You start to see it later in the Old Testament, but you see it full-blown in the teachings of Jesus. In Isaiah and some in Solomon, some of these you start to see. If you think about the trajectory again, you see God moving his people even further along to maybe points 5 or 6 with the beginnings of enemy love. Elisha caught it. Elijah did not. Elijah calls fire down on his enemies. Elisha, after they've been blinded, he prepares a table, a feast, a dinner for his enemies. So you see the trajectory in the Old Testament, but you don't really see it full-blown until Jesus, and you don't see it yet in the commandments of Moses. Now, notice that Jesus' frustration as he bumps into maybe even some of the same resistance that some people are feeling right now as they're listening to this. Jesus bumped into this same resistance in those of his day when they were faced with moving from the old ethics to the new ethic. In Luke 16:16 through 17, Jesus said, "The law and the prophets were in effect until John came. Now since then, the good news of the kingdom is proclaimed, and everyone is attacking it. It is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than one stroke of a letter of the law to be dropped." Jesus was asking them to drop certain things that Moses commanded, and there was attack, there was resistance to it. And Jesus was just stating the obvious, it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than it is for people to change. Now, some things in the new ethics will overlap with the old ethics. In other words, some things are commanded by both Jesus and Moses, and they'll remain the same. You still don't murder, regardless of which person you follow. But even in these cases, I would submit to you that as a follower of Jesus, we're actually doing these things because it's what Jesus taught. Even if it's the same thing Moses taught, we have that in common, but we're following those commands because they were, again, the things that Jesus taught. It just so happens that Moses taught them too. Some things from Moses I won't follow, such as the show no pity, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. That's a prime example. Some of the others are stoning my rebellious son, or stoning my daughter who's not a virgin on the night that she's betrothed to her husband, or on her wedding night. I won't do those things, even though Moses commanded them to be done. I won't do those because I'm a follower of Jesus, and Jesus calls me to look at things differently now, calls me to a higher ethical standard of love. loving our enemy rather than retaliation. You find this in Deuteronomy 8, where the law, I'm sorry, John chapter 8, where the law commanded that the woman be stoned. And Jesus lifts a higher ethic, and she's not stoned. In this example, we choose restorative justice, the restorative justice of Jesus found in grace, the grace ethic, rather than the retributive justice found in the law ethic. So I'll close this week with Jesus' own words in John, a story from Luke's version of the Jesus story, and then some background on Acts 2, and then I'll let you go. If you're still hanging in with me, we're at about 21 minutes right now, so thank you for your patience. We're almost wrapping up here, so we're almost finished. This is from John 13, 34, and 35, and I want you to cross-reference it with Romans 5:10. Jesus said, "I am giving you a new commandment, that you love," and remember this is enemy love, "one another just as I have loved you." No one had ever loved anyone the way Jesus had, so this was a new commandment. "You also should love one another, and by this will everyone know that you are my disciples, if you have this kind of love for one another." Now this is Luke 9, 21 through 35. Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone. And he said, "The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and must be killed on the third day and be raised to life." Then he said to them all, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will save it. Truly I tell you, some of you standing here will not taste death before they see the kingdom of God." And here I think Jesus is speaking about the cross, the enemy love core of what his kingdom is all about, that they're about to see in Jesus' death and resurrection. But he continues on. After about eight days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, James, and John with him and went into the mountain to pray. And as he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah. Now remember, Jesus had previously said that the law and the prophets were in effect up until John, but that he came preaching the kingdom. It says, two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. Then a cloud appeared and covered them, and they, Peter, James, and John, were afraid as they entered the cloud. A voice came from the cloud saying, "This is my Son whom I have chosen. Listen to him." In other words, there were three people standing there, and God could have said, "Listen to any of them." What God is saying with audible voice is, "This is my Son. Just as you've based everything you believe about me on Moses and Elijah, the law and the prophets, just as you've based your moral ethic on how you're to live on these two, Moses and Elijah, now this is my Son. Follow him. Base everything you believe about me and how you believe you should live on him. He's my Son. He's whom I have chosen." Lastly, the Feast of Pentecost in Acts 2, celebrated 50 days from Passover. Originally, it was the celebration of the giving of the law on Mount Sinai some 50 days after the Exodus. And according to Jewish tradition, the law was supernaturally uttered from Sinai in 70 languages, the 70 languages of the nations of the world at that time. But in Acts 2, what we find is what is proclaimed this Pentecost is the life story of Jesus, told by the apostles and heard in every language present in Jesus' day. It's a new moral ethic for sure. It's much to ponder. I'm sure that there's a lot to think about. Heart group application this week. Number one, prayerfully go back over the verses shared in this e-site and pay special attention to the context of each as you're looking at them. Number two, write down any thoughts, any questions, any personal challenges which you're faced with, which think about submitting to each one of these challenges and write down your thoughts. Submit each one of your questions or your challenges or your thoughts. Submit those to God in prayer and ask him to give you deeper insight this week as you meditate on Jesus' teaching of enemy love. Number three, divide up what you've written down into two categories. the insights and personal challenges that you've discovered, and then your questions, your unanswered questions. And be prepared to share each of these with your heart group, especially any questions that have remained unanswered, and discuss these as a group. Get other people's opinion. Ambrosius Spittelmeyer, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Spittelmeyer was an Anabaptist under interrogation in 1527, and when he described how the Anabaptists came together and worshipped, it says that when they have come together, they teach one another the divine word, and they ask the other, how do you understand this saying? There is among them a diligent living according to the divine word. So follow that example, and if you've got some unanswered questions, then talk about it. Discuss it as a group. Ask each other, how do you understand this? Paul said this in Romans 15:14, I am convinced, my brothers and sisters, that you yourselves are full of goodness, filled with knowledge, and competent to instruct one another. So do that this week in your heart group. Keep living in love, and remember that's enemy love, loving like Christ, and keep enlarging the kingdom, till a world where love reigns, again, is the only world that remains. I love you guys. I'll see you next week.